This is Mary Alice, and you're listening to Global Heart to Heart Radio. Today, we will be spending time with Valerie Rochelle, who is the artistic director of the Oregon Cabaret Theater. Valerie has a Master of Fine Arts in Directing from the University of California at Irvine. She has well over 20 years of professional theatrical director and choreographer experience. Valerie has directed and choreographed Les Mis, Cabaret, Fiddler on the Roof, Grease, South Pacific, My Fair Lady, and many, many more. Now, Valerie has been the artistic director of the Oregon Cabaret Theater for nearly 6 years now. The Oregon Cabaret Theater is a well-established Ashland attraction. It's popular with visitors, and the locals love it. The theater has a unique and inviting ambiance. There's 6 shows a week all year round, consistently professional and high-quality performances. No wonder why the Oregon Cabaret has a nationwide reputation for excellence. Now, after a long period of being closed, the Oregon Cabaret Theater is presenting Neil Simon's classic comedy, The Odd Couple. It will be opening on July 16th and playing through September 16th, this 2020. After that, the remaining 2020 season will feature Poirot, Murder on the Lynx, and then Irving Berlin's White Christmas. You can order tickets online at OregonCabaret.com, or you can call 541-488-2902. Do not wait. The tickets will sell out very quickly. We've seen lots of shows there and have always had a great time, have never been disappointed. If you haven't seen a show at the Oregon Cabaret, go for it. It will be an extraordinary experience. The Oregon Cabaret is located in the heart of downtown Ashland. Valerie, welcome.
Thank you.
So happy to have you here today. Basically, I would like to hear what you would like to speak about today, but I also have some questions about how you got into being a choreographer, director, what brought you to the place you went to California, University of California at Irvine, and you have a Master of Fine Arts in Directing. What got you to that?
Well, I was always in the theater arts. My parents are magicians, professional magicians.
Oh, wow.
Yes. So I joke about being, I was born in a box, popped out of a magic box. No, but they toured the world. I mean, we worked in Japan. They worked everywhere. My father and mother were illusionists. So they did the big illusions. And my dad was an escape artist. So he escaped from straitjackets and handcuffs. And he was prided himself on escaping these things without any trickery or riggery. That's not a word. rigging. It is now. Without any rigging, he actually would escape real straitjackets and ropes and handcuffs that weren't, trick rigged. Wow. So yes, he actually was an advisor for David Copperfield on his escape from Alcatraz, on how to pick locks, because my father was a lock. He could pick locks. He taught me how to pick locks when I was a child. Oh, the things I learned. But anyway, so my parents were in the business. And so I got into dancing and singing and performing at a very young age, and then went to school, undergrad. I got my BFA in acting and realized I was doing a lot more choreography than I was performing, but I wasn't getting much directing work out of college. So I decided in order for people to take me seriously, I needed to get my master's degree in directing. So I was doing a lot of the choreography, but not a lot of being in charge. So I got my master's degree and went directly to a place called PCPA Theater Fest in Central Coast of California, became their casting director and a resident director for them. And that's where I really took off my professional directing career.
Wow. So, and you've been doing that for over 16 years now?
Yeah. My first professional directing gig was I was 22 and now I'm 44.
Wow. So I'm off.
So that's close,
For 22 years.
Yeah.
Put you in the field of expert.
I hope so by now. No, I'm always learning. That's a really lovely thing about art and theater and, any kind of art is you're always learning.
Oh, yes. Sounds like an exciting field, though. I mean, to direct a show, I mean, you do it all.
Sort of. I mean, the whole goal of directing is to actually use everyone's expertise and to be the person to understand how to put it all together.
Right.
So, you know, I do know a little bit about all of it, but I would never presume to try to light design a show.
Well,
I can tell you what I think looks great or what emotionally works for whatever beat, but getting behind that board or focusing things in the air, that is for someone else to do and for me to say that looks great or right. That doesn't look great.
Right. And change it.
Yes.
See, yeah. Right. You don't have to know the technical part.
Well, a little bit you should, but enough. So that you can talk to the designer and speak their language, but
right. Enough to do it, but to actually get into the nitty gritty of it, who would have the time to learn every aspect of it to that degree? You wouldn't ever be able to do the directing.
It's like being a captain of a ship. You have to understand how to drive a ship. And so you need to have experienced all parts of it. And you have very talented people to do the thing they're best at within that show. Because I don't have all the best ideas. My goal is to set a goal, like to set a destination or a vision for vision that we have for this show. So that's, I didn't even think of that. That's fantastic.
Right.
That I get to bring all these talented people together to try to create a vision for the show. Because, you know, I have good ideas, but collaborating with other people sparks great ideas.
Oh, yeah. I've seen quite a few shows at the Cabaret, and they're always great. It always amazes me. I mean, all the detail that goes into putting it on, and then these performers come out, and bing, 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 and everything's there. The music, the sound, the lights, everybody's working together, it's just syncs, every bit of it. Well, I always love going to the Cabaret and seeing the shows.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. It's lovely that you recognize that it takes all those things, because that's actually the magic of it is those are things that, you know, sometimes a regular audience member won't even think about.
Right.
It's all about the performers, and it should be all about the performers. That's what you should be involved in, the story and,
absolutely,
and feeling for these people that are mm-hmm. performing. But it's nice to hear sometimes that you notice the lighting or you notice that the sound is insane.
It's seamless. And yes, and because you do it so well and it is seamless, people don't think about that.
Correct. I mean, we work months in advance to be able to come up with design concepts because we have to start building a set. And in order to build a set, you have to have building plans. And in order to have the building plans, the costume designer and the scenic designer have to color coordinate everything and make sure that, you know, if you have an all black background, that the costume designer isn't going to put people in black, because then guess what the actors look like?
Right.
Floating heads.
Right.
So, or clashing colors
that
don't complement each other.
Well, that would be your mother and father's thing, floating
heads.
Yes,
my magician parents. Yes, exactly. But yeah, so it's a lot of pre-work, sometimes, you know, 9-10 months in advance of before we even start rehearsals, because we have to create this entire world that these actors live inside. And their first day of rehearsal is understanding we present them with the world. We're like, hey, this is the costumes you'll be wearing and the hairstyles and the shoes and the, you know, the paint treatment, so that you understand what kind of world you're in. And so it's really a cool process.
It really sounds very exciting. If it's a play, like you're coming up as the Odd Couple, so you have something substantial to begin with. How about something you create? Because you've written some plays, I understand.
Yes. My husband is actually a published playwright. And so we're lucky to have that sort of talent kind of on staff. And mm-hmm. so he's actually been writing almost a play a year for the Cabaret.
Wow.
Yeah, last year, The Sign of the Four, the Sherlock Holmes was his. Our very first year here, he wrote an adaptation of Christmas Carol that we did at Christmas, which was kind of a steampunk version, which was really fun. He is writing Murder on the Links, the Poirot that we're doing in the fall. And it's nice to have a playwright on staff for sure. But you start with a script. That's right. Where you start. You start with whatever this writer has created. It's your job to take it from the page, bring it to life on the stage. So that's where everyone starts, is we all start with the script and then we come together. And I usually, as a director, I will pose a question to my designers that I want either answered or that I want the audience to walk away thinking about. So my goal is to say, this script, I want the audience to walk away thinking about how they affect others. I want the audience to walk away and I want them to call their congressman when they walk out the door and tell them about this thing.
Right.
Or I want them to walk out singing this song and feeling this joy.
Right.
And so that's how you kind of guide the designers into a place of what kind of production it's going to be.
You have directed and choreographed quite a bit of plays here. I have a whole list. Les Mis, Cabaret, Fiddler on the Roof, Grease, South Pacific, Hello Dolly, and the list goes on and on. And as I was checking that out on my show recently, what I've been doing is I've been picking musicals and picking just the highlighted songs from the musicals to play, because I can only play so many licensed songs over the radio at a time. And I was like, whoa, these are a lot of the plays that I was and movies that I was pulling out the music from, because it's so exciting. So how do you go about doing that? Because this is licensed play scripts and music, and you have to go through the whole legal gamut to get to the point where you can produce that and direct that.
Yes. So for example, the Full Monty, which we had to put on the back burner till next year, you apply for the royalties to, you know, the rights to do that show. And they ask you a bunch of questions about the size of your theater and how much you pay people. And are you union? Are you non-union? What's your average ticket price, all that stuff. And then they do their calculations and they tell you how much it is for a deposit and for a guarantee, what's called a guarantee. So you pay a lot of money up front, and then you do box office kind of, they ask for a percentage of your box office. So if you're making less than what you've paid for the guarantee, you don't pay any more. But if you make more than what you've paid in the guarantee, you pay them that week by week, the extra money. So usually it's a percentage. Usually it's anywhere from 10 to, well, Mamma Mia was 15% royalties of the tickets, because it's such a hot title. And of course, we sold every ticket to every performance of that show. There was not one performance that wasn't sold out. So of course they're like, well, we know that's going to make money, so we want all the money. So, so you end up paying a percentage. Now it's a little bit different for community theater. Community theater pays a per performance fee, which usually ends up being a lot less, because they know that they want to encourage communities to produce theater, but they're not going to try to, I guess, make too much money off of a community theater. So they usually like $60 to $120 per performance for community theater, whereas I end up paying, like I said, 10 to 15% of my box office, which sometimes, I mean, I think for Mamma Mia, we ended up paying $40,000+ in royalties total.
Wow.
So it's, whereas like if, you know, a different theater in town did it that was a non-professional theater, they would probably end up paying $4,000. So I pay about 10 times more. Yeah. And of course it all adds up. You know, you have to pay designers and staff members and employees and box office and unions and the designers union and the, you know, actors union. And so theater is not a moneymaker, but it is definitely worth it.
Because you love what you do.
I do love what I do.
I can just see it in your face. Well, I hear it in your voice, and I see it in what goes on there. And absolutely, you have to be dedicated. I would imagine it's not the kind of work you do if you're not loving it or dedicated to it.
It's true. It does feed your soul and your spirit.
Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, people come in and they enjoy it, and you even get the icing on the cake.
Yep, it's true. Theater is not theater without an audience. That is the magic component.
I know. What do we do without that, right?
I remember when I was in undergrad, you know, in the 90s, and our teachers were all, you know, theater was kind of going through a downturn at that point, because we had the highlight of the 80s, like Broadway musicals in the 80s. I mean, like so many, and this huge, it was like a golden era of musical theater in the 80s. So by the time you get to the mid 90s, we're trailing off a bit. Theater wasn't as popular, and all your, you know, so many teachers telling me, gosh, if you can do anything else, do something else. And me going, what else would I do? Like, I can't, I have other skills, sure. And I could do other jobs, sure, but I wouldn't love it as much. So
really, what would feed your soul?
Right.
As
what
much.
Would feed your soul? But it's interesting. I tell my students, because they were telling me, oh, choose something else. And I never, ever will say that to a student who wants to get into this field. I will say it's hard. and it's difficult, of course. But sometimes if the sacrifices are worth it for you, then yeah, they're worth it for you. And you'll know if they are or not.
Sure.
But theater will never die because of what you said. It's flesh and blood. Mm-hmm. It's in the moment. The audience, even though the actors have done the show a million times in the same way, every performance is different.
Oh, sure.
Because it's live. Mm-hmm. You know, so it will never, we've had it since man was around
since
a campfire.
Time began.
Since a
fire, right.
And we will still have live theater in some form forever.
I was still living on the East Coast in the 80s. So I went to a lot of Broadway shows and a lot of off-Broadway shows. And I remember even in high school, and that was in the early 70s, cutting school, hopping the bus into Manhattan.
Yes.
Going to see a play. And we would have to get tickets and be up in, you know, nosebleed seats, looking down at the orchestra. So who wasn't there? So on intermission, you could run down
and take their seats.
Oh, I'm getting chills remembering those days. But to think somebody saying that the theater was going to die in the 90s because the 80s was so prolific, I don't think so.
I don't think so. It goes through changes and surges, of course.
So tell us about what's coming up at the Cabaret.
Sure. So because of all this, of course, we had to take a break and figure out our plan. I think the upside to our location is that because we're restaurant seating, we can seat people in parties and still keep, 6 foot distance from all the way around to the next table. And so, yes, we have a new seating plan and we can only seat 48 to 64 people, depending on the size of your party.
That's about half of what your normal capacity
is,
right?
Yeah, we're normally about 140.
Right.
So we are removing tables and creating space. There'll be no front row so that there's space between the, the actors and the first row of patrons. And I think that's the upside is our space is intimate. And it's still worth doing a show, even if we only have 50 people in the audience.
Sure.
So because we wanted to make everything as safe as possible, we had to change the show. So instead of doing full Monty, because when we do full Monty, we really want to do full Monty for real. Oh, right.
Thunder.
Thunder on the recording. But when we do the full Monty, we want to be able to do it full out with the gigantic cast, with all the kissing and intimacy. There are scenes where the men have to be crammed together in one bathroom stall for like 4 minutes together.
Right,
and that's really close quarters. And of course the nudity at the end, although I don't think that nudity would cause a virus to spread, but you never know. So
you can be nude in Ashland, then it's legal.
It's fine. But anyway, we know that show is going to sell out to full houses.
Oh, I'm sure it will.
And so we didn't want to deprive the audience or our poor cast of having, it's a show where you need audience reaction. You need hooping and hollering.
Oh, yeah.
And, laughter. And we know that right now we're going to be a little more quiet of an audience because because of all this.
Just what's going on.
So we decided to push the full Monty to next year. And so we decided, well, what's a really great play that has title recognition that people know that we've never done at the Cabaret, smaller cast. And we bounced around with a lot of different titles and we landed on The Odd Couple, which I reread it. And what's great about The Odd Couple is, yeah, it was written in 1965, but it's a human experience. Breaking up and having a divorce, all that stuff is a human experience. Mm-hmm. It doesn't rely on the time period for its comedy.
No, it is definitely a timeless.
Show. Yes, it relies on personalities, mm-hmm. and it relies on friendship. And I mean, like the things that they're going through are universal.
Right.
We all understand heartbreak.
Yes, we all do.
And we can all laugh at the silliness of what's going on between the two men and their families. And so it's, rereading that script made me go, that's going to be a joy to sit and watch.
Yes.
And it is, there's no kissing in it. So no one's going to be uncomfortable watching that on stage. I think the closest they get is during the poker game with the guys when they're playing poker. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's going to be fun.
I say of my relationship that we're the odd couple.
Right.
I happen to be the compulsive, neurotic anal retentive.
Clean one, yeah. I am too in my relationship.
So don't you think it's more difficult for the clean one? For the
because
anal
we
one?
Always see it. We always see all the mess. That's the only thing we think about.
I want to go back I am just intrigued about your parents and your travels in your life. How was it traveling around for you so much?
Well, I was really lucky. I always had school. Like I wasn't homeschooled. I went to public school and, I would travel a lot with my parents. When I was eight, my entire family's from New York. I was the only person born on the West Coast.
Okay.
So, my grandparents, my dad's parents, when I turned eight, decided to move because they were going to retire anyway. My grandmother worked for the Kodak company for like 20 something years.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. They lived in Rochester. And they decided to move to Oregon because my parents' magic career was actually starting to blossom. And so they're like, well, we're retiring. Let's go out and help them build their business. So I had my grandparents to take care of me when my parents had to be on the road for longer than I could go with them.
Okay.
But I went with them a lot. When they worked in Japan, I was 11 and I missed about a month of fourth grade at the tail end. And then I missed a month of fifth grade at the beginning just so I could, right.
But you were in Japan.
But I was in Okinawa.
Oh my God.
I know. They worked in a resort hotel as like the nightclub act. They had three shows a night and I worked backstage. I was 11 years old and I was doing their music and helping them out with their props. But I was on the road with them.
School?
Yeah. Who needs school at that point? But then I was a ballerina at the time. And then the very next year, I actually went on tour with the Eugene Ballet Company for their Nutcracker tour. So I missed like 2 months of school for that. Mm-hmm. And luckily teachers, you know, gave me homework and they had a tutor on the road. And all of us kids that were in the Nutcracker did homework every day on the bus to the next location and then did the show. And so it was, I was used to traveling and I was used to doing homework on the road and used to doing school on the road and having less, you know, in school time. But luckily in those days, the state of Oregon was like, sure, no problem.
Yeah, really?
As long as you get your work done and test well, you're fine.
Yeah, why not? But well, you were getting an education you would never get in the classroom.
And still getting straight A's. So,
yeah, because how hard was that based on what you were doing? I mean, really, do you have brothers and sisters?
I don't.
Oh, so
it was just me. And so I think that was actually helpful to my education and being able to travel with my parents because they could concentrate, you know, on the business and then just me. So,
have you ever read Jean Houston's book, The Mythic Life?
I have not.
I've studied with Jean for, I don't know, 20 some odd years. And her life is similar to yours. Her father was Jack Houston.
Oh, yeah.
Who wrote, you know, Who's On First?
Yeah.
And to hear her tell stories of her travels while she was growing up and being on Hollywood movie sets. And so she wrote the book, My Mythic Life. If you ever have a chance, you would relate.
Definitely read that.
You would relate and you would enjoy it very much.
Mine was a little more like a circus life or variety show life. Traveling with a lot of other acts, you know, jugglers and fire eaters and fairs. We did so many fairs that nowadays my daughter will ask me to go to the fair and I'll be like, do we have to? I've started to learn to enjoy fairs again, but you know, things like that.
Right. So, that's great. That's fabulous. And what else would you like to tell us today about either yourself or the Oregon Cabaret Theater?
Just that, you know, we are very excited that we were given permission to open in phase two. So, I mean, technically we could have opened on June 5th, but we weren't prepared to do that. I mean, we had the Spitfire Grill cast in. We kept them in town for 2 months. We housed them safely. We even paid some of them a little bit to stick around just in case. And because it's a small cast, it was 7 people, and it's such a beautiful show. Oh, it's one of my most favorite musicals ever. So I kind of had this hope that we'd be able to, and we could have opened, but the problem was that the Actors Equity Association Union was not prepared to allow us to give contracts to their members during this time. So they weren't prepared for safety. Right? And I completely understand. We're actually there reviewing our contract and our safety rules because we have a bunch of new safety rules in place for actors and staff for rehearsals and tech rehearsals and how we're going to handle performances because the actors can't wear masks while on stage.
Oh, of course not.
And now we know that this virus is airborne, that touch virus is very rare and that it's airborne.
Right.
And that wearing masks is like 80% chance if both people are wearing masks that no one's going to get anything.
Right.
So, but the actors can't, we can't do a show. So they have to, I have to try to do the best I can to protect my actors who are going to be out there performing their hearts out for an audience. So we're in talks with Actors Equity Association. I think hopefully we'll come to some sort of agreement because they are having to handle the whole country of actors out of work. And how do we start theater again? So I understand it's a hard process for them to try to figure out what's going to be safe. So hopefully by next week, I will know for sure if we can work with the union. If we cannot work with the union, we still will be moving forward. We will be doing The Odd Couple, but with an all non-union cast. So we will be opening July 16th.
Okay.
And we're going to run that show through September 6th. And it will be a, you know, socially distanced audience. We'll still have the restaurant will still be open. So you can same as always though, reservations are required. I think dinner hour starts at 6 o'clock. The show will still be at 8 and you can still order, come in at like 7:30 to order. You don't have to have a reservation to order starters or beverages or desserts. Mm-hmm. So we're going to hopefully be one of the first companies in this area to be able to bring theater back just because of our unique situation.
Yes.
That unique, beautiful restaurant building. Our high ceilings are great for airflow. the 1911 building is uninsulated, thankfully, in a way, because that helps us not have stagnant air. Yep. Which, because we always complain, oh, I wish we had insulation. Now we're like, oh, thank God we don't have insulation.
Thank God.
Thank you, buildings in 1911.
And it is a great building.
Such a unique experience.
Yeah, it's a great building. I love it there. I understand when it was restored, because at one time the building was painted pink.
Mm-hmm. The old pink church.
I wasn't around for that. I hadn't been here yet. But I understand that when it was renovated, they even put in new stained glass windows, and they brought it back. They brought it back pretty much to the original
as
era.
Much as possible. Yes. Right. Craig Hudson's the owner of the building still,
He
started the Oregon Cabaret Theater with Jim Giancarlo, who was a friend and mentor of mine, who has since passed away. But I worked with Jim quite a bit. I met him in like 2005, and I adore him. He's the one that kind of brought me here. But so Craig still owns the building. He bought it in 1984 and started renovating it. It took 2 years, but the stained glass windows had all either were gone and were boarded up. And there was actually a lot of folks just crashing in there. The hospital used to use it for a storage of their old beds that they were waiting to kind of get rid of. And so there was like a bunch of mattresses in there and graffiti everywhere. And Craig Hudson took this amazing building and completely restored it into a theater. When people found out he was restoring it, because he had a master, he had someone who handmade and who knew how to do stained glass windows the same way they were done in 1911. Wow. So he had someone restore them. And when people found out that he was having the windows restored, some people had taken the windows out to save them from being broken.
Oh, wow.
And brought them back to be put back in. So some of the windows are original.
Oh, wow. I did not know that either
until like 2 years ago. I didn't know that either until my husband, Rick, who's our managing director, found that out. He was talking to somebody about the restoration of the building and was like, I had no idea. I thought Craig had, you know, gotten someone to make all these windows. And a lot of them are, you know, newish, I guess, 30 something years old.
But you don't really know looking at them.
No, because he tried to have them done the way that they should be done.
Right.
And that's Craig is, he's just so amazing that way. He's done more. He likes to take buildings and restore them and make them beautiful. I thought that was an amazing story that some people saw the windows being broken and destroyed and tried to save some of them.
That's fabulous.
It's fabulous. Oh, the storm is beautiful.
Oh yeah. Nice. And the earth needs the water.
It does. We need the water.
Well, we're very excited that we're going to be having some shows at the cabaret. And this weekend, I'll be going online and reserving tickets for every show. I have faith, and I know that the show must go on, and it will.
It will. Even if we have to make changes or whatever, our box office manager, Jenny, has been a goddess and has been calling every single patron individually And so she, if you have not gotten a call from Jenny Harris, you will, I promise. If you already have tickets that have been canceled, she will get to you. And people have been, I have to say, the support in this town has been incredible. Mm. The biggest problem is that we live off money that's in the bank for the year. So we take our season subscribers and that's the money we can sort of produce with for the year. I know money is hard right now, but so many people have been either getting a credit on their account for the future. So banking on us to be open in the future.
That's great.
Which is amazing. Or donating the ticket money to us.
That's what I do.
Oh, it is. And I've been trying to send out personal emails to every single person who donates to us because they have no idea what it means. I mean, it's my husband and I bought the theater. It's our baby. It's our, like this, it's we're mom pa, you know what I mean? And so to have a mom pa theaters, there's not very many in this country. Most of them are not for profit. Most of them have board of directors and people donating money. And we're a corporation. We are not a not for profit. So
you need to make money.
We only live off ticket sales and food sales. That's it. Mm-hmm. We have no angels giving us money to get us through. So all of you angels that have already donated your tickets, thank you. And all of you angels that have given us, taken a credit on your account, thank you so much because it's going to keep us, it's going to keep us afloat until we can actually open the doors again.
Okay.
So,
well, maybe, you know, what I just heard was we need a fundraiser. We need a fundraiser because it's money that is extremely important in our society. We must have theater.
We will. We will. I have hope.
Yes. I know you'll do well. And we will be there.
We will be there.
We will be there July 16th.
Yes. That's our opening day.
July 16th. We will be there for The Odd Couple.
Great.
At the Oregon Cabaret Theater.
I think you have to call for tickets right now. I think online, just because we have to sort through a bunch of...
What is the phone number? I don't have that written down here. I do have OregonCabaret.com.
Yes, that is correct. And our ticket, our box office number is 541-488-2902. And I believe there's a message on that line that gives you our temporary box office number because Jenny is working from home.
Yes.
So she has a temporary cell phone that she can answer right away, but she is receiving messages on that line and she is calling every single person that, you know, emails. You can also email at boxoffice@OregonCabaret.com.
This is Mary Alice, and I hope that you enjoyed that time together with Valerie as much as I did. So remember, you can order tickets online at theoregoncabaret.com or call the theater at 541-488-2902. And do not wait. The tickets will sell out very quickly. I guarantee it. If you haven't seen a show there, go for it. It will be an extraordinary experience. The Oregon Cabaret, located in the heart of downtown Ashland. This is Mary Alice with love from my heart to yours.